I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 135 for the week starting Sunday, 11 October 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like Tokoloshe's used up my data cap.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about Microsoft's big devices keynote.
Also this week, Apple Watch and iPhone 6 and 6S plus South African pricing and availability, Afrio's cutting costs across its new network, and Seacom going direct to corporate South Africa.
Before we get to all of that, though, we need to pay the bills. We will be back just after this.
Okay, my schnookums, I have to get back to work now.
Aww. But I'm going to miss you.
I'll miss you too, but I really have to go.
Okay, Poopsie, but you hang up first.
You hang up first, my little pumpkin pie.
No, you.
No, you.
No, you.
This is not a work call, but it is taking place at work, and you are paying for it. But with Voice Supreme from Vox Telecom, you get the best call rate at only 59 cents per minute, with per second billing. It's the perfect alternative to VoIP least cost routing. SMS 43255 and we'll call you back. Standard SMS rates, T's and C's apply.
Well, welcome to the show. Hi, how's it, Duncan? So you just came back from Rage, the big gaming expo at Northgate.
Yeah, I just popped in there. I wanted to have a quick look before I go back tomorrow to do some work there. And it's crazy. It's always crazy there.
Yeah.
I'm glad I only spent an hour, but I was surprised at the amount of people that are there on a Friday. I
mean, okay.
Do these people not have jobs? But I know there's a lot of students and a lot of young people there. Yeah, yeah.
But the money from their gaming.
Yeah, exactly. But I always love going to that show. There's so many interesting things to see. The cosplayers are always a sight. Yeah. You know, people dressing up as favorite characters.
Yeah.
And this year there was a few interesting things that I spotted, and I'll definitely go have a look again, a closer look tomorrow. But there's a company that does booster boards, which is like motorized skateboards.
Oh, yeah.
Which are very, very cool. I've seen a few of them around, and that's definitely something I want to get myself.
So you reckon it's worth going up there? Because I always find it very hot in that dome and very busy on the weekend day.
Oh yeah, Saturdays and Sundays is crazy busy, but it's worth going. I mean, it's definitely something you need to see. There's some really cool. There's a guy doing three scans of people, which is very nice. 3D, they scan you in as a figurine.
Yeah.
And some virtual reality stuff too. So if you just want to touch, see, and feel, it's definitely the place to go to.
Okay. Cool. Well, if I find time this weekend, I'll go check it. I don't really have an excuse because I'm not far from the dome, so.
Yeah, I know, you're just up the road.
Yeah, cool. Anyway, let's get into this week's news, and the big one this week, I don't know, Richard, I haven't had a chance to chat to you yet, but did you manage to see any of the big Microsoft keynote this week, the devices?
I actually didn't. I missed it this week. I mean,
okay.
I heard about it, I know what's going on, but I didn't see the actual keynote.
It was a very interesting keynote. Quite interesting presenters as well. The guy who did the main sort of presentation was very cocky. You know, it was very, almost, I don't know, it looked like he was trying to channel Steve Jobs at some stages. But he was he had a good presentation that he did, and some really interesting devices that Microsoft has put out.
Yeah, those Surfaces look amazing, don't they?
The Surface Pro 4, okay, we were all expecting that to come out, and we were also expecting the new Lumia devices. Mm. I mean, all the news on that. In fact, the guy who's doing the keynote, I forget his name, Panos, I think, joked that, you know, it makes it difficult for him because he has to announce a product that everyone already knows all the details about.
Yeah.
But the one thing they did keep secret and didn't leak beforehand was this new Microsoft Surface Book. And it's the first time that Microsoft has actually developed a laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks very, very, very cool.
It does. Some new kind of the hinge technology in there, but a little bit of design borrowed from Apple as well. I think it's going to be a hit.
I think so. It's expensive. It's certainly not. It's certainly not going to appeal to the mass market, but it's a great looking piece of kit, and the fact that it doubles as a large tablet as well is really interesting.
Now, Microsoft really needs to, you know, the Surface concept has always been a solid one. Mm. I think it's just got lost with some of the other technologies that superseded it.
So solid, in fact, that Apple copied them with its latest iPad Pro.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you have to be doing something right when Apple copies you.
Yeah, it goes back and forth, though.
But the Surface Book looks amazing. It's not going to be cheap. I'm guessing the entry-level one is probably going to come in at around 22,000 Rand.
Yeah.
If the exchange rate stays where it is currently. And going right up to probably about 40 grand. for the top end one with 1 terabyte SSD and 16 gig of RAM.
So that's truly a laptop replacement as a tablet.
That is a high end laptop replacement, yeah. And it's got a beautiful looking keyboard. And the problem I always had with the Surface was the type cover, I think they called it, which I never really liked that much. It didn't feel like a proper keyboard. It didn't feel like something I could really touch type on at speed.
Exactly. It looked like something it was just slapped on as a cover that doubles as something. Mm. But with this one, you know, especially if you look at the angle that it's sitting on when you unfold it as a notebook, that little angle there, I think it makes a big difference in how you perceive a keyboard when you do actually type on it.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be good to see this one in action.
This new one looks cool, yeah. And the interesting thing is, although most of the intelligence is sitting in the screen because it doubles as a tablet, they've also put a graphics accelerator, NVIDIA GPU, which apparently has been designed specifically for this tablet, or this computer rather, in the keyboard section.
Oh wow!
So when you attach the two together, it's actually a more powerful device. It's not simply a keyboard on its own. It's actually got a GPU built into it. Yeah.
So it's about time Microsoft put some of their R&D budget to good use. I think we haven't seen enough new innovation from them. And,
and this is their first tablet, and their first laptop, and it looks pretty cool.
Crazy. It's crazy. And I think it's good to see a company like Microsoft follow Apple's lead by actually producing their own hardware, because we know when a company does that, when they have full control over their hardware that they put out, the operating system feels a lot smoother.
Yeah.
They're able to actually develop software directly for their own hardware, and it will give them one up on other brands. Branded devices.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that I can't see them building a full range of notebooks to kind of take away.
It's kind of like a reference design, like the Nexus.
Exactly.
From Google. But really cool, and it actually shows you what perhaps it kind of shows up the PC industry for the fact that it hasn't brought out these sort of form factor. Sure, yeah. Companies like Lenovo and others have been doing some cool stuff, but no one's done something like this.
Yeah, exactly. We need to see it in action and kind of see how it performs. But if this truly is the beast that it looks like, this is going to give traditional notebooks a very hard time.
Yeah. It's expensive, but I'm going to be tempted to get one.
That's first generation. Oh, yeah.
It is first generation.
First generation. I think second generation will certainly become... I can see this becoming a standard notebook kind of look and feel. You know, we have a tablet that turns into a notebook rather than a notebook that you flip the screen around.
Yeah, that picture you've got on your screen, there's the old Surface 3 tablets.
Oh, is this the old one?
That's the old Surface 3. Yeah, just Google that.
There we go. Okay.
Google Surface Book. Yeah. It looks really cool. It doesn't look like the screen and the keyboard section should actually separate. And then they've got this cool, patented locking mechanism where it snaps into the keyboard and won't fall out even if you turn the thing upside down and shake it around. Which was a little bit of a problem with some of these solutions. The tablet can easily fall out of the type cover.
Yeah, sorry, that was a hinging system, I was speaking
about. Very cool hinging system. Very cool. And comes with a pen, and just generally looks like pretty cool tech.
Oh, it looks beautiful.
It does. It'd
be nice to have a Windows logo on the back of my notebook.
Be different from the crowd. There was that, I don't know if you saw that thing, it was on Twitter and Facebook a few months ago, the picture of Apple's traditional payoff line, Think Different.
Yeah.
It had a huge hall of people all sitting on their laptops, all with the Apple logo on the back of the laptop, it just said at the bottom, Think Different. So if you genuinely want to think different, you should probably consider one of these.
Oh, yeah.
And the new Lumia smartphones look pretty cool as well. The 950, definitely, which is a 5.2-inch hexa-core phone, and the 950 XL, which is a huge 5.7-inch phablet. And I'm tempted to buy one of these things. Just for a change of scenery.
You'll write it off as a compulsory review purchase, because you need to cover this, right?
Exactly. need to have a Windows phone device in the office, right?
Yeah.
And Windows 10 on mobile is looking... I mean, it looks quite similar to Windows Phone 8.
Yeah.
And 8.1, but it's...
The concept remains, but hopefully it's the mature operating system that we all wanted it to be for the longest time. And if it works well, if the integration and the syncing with Windows 10 works well between your notebook or tablet and the device itself, then you have a true Apple competitor in every sense of the word, platform and functionality.
Yeah. And did you didn't see the demo, so you didn't see them plugging the phone into a monitor and turning the phone into a PC.
I heard about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is an amazing feature.
Very cool. It's an optional extra little dock that they sell. There we go. Rachel's just looking at the video on screen now. And it turns into what looks like a fully functional Windows PC.
Yeah, so it takes the power of your the power of the device, the specifications, yeah, and just enables it to, you know, to perform like a PC rather than just a.
And it works well. I mean, especially with the OneDrive integration, the fact that you can work in the cloud now. You don't need you can if you save all your documents to OneDrive, which I do, then. You know, you can just plug your phone into any monitor you want, and off you go.
Yeah,
exactly. Provided you're carrying that dongle with you, which is an optional extra. Unfortunately, doesn't come with the device.
Yeah, yeah. But we know that our smartphones in our pockets really have more processing power than most of our PCs were 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
It's inevitable.
To base do your mail and Word and that sort of thing, it's fine. Exactly. And in the demonstration, you've got to play with it and practice to see how it really performs. But in the demo, it looked absolutely snappy, firing up PowerPoint and flipping between applications.
If the software is really optimized for the hardware that's in the body, I mean, it should perform like that.
Yes.
Especially if they have obviously control over all the hardware, and they can write very specific lines of code for each of those bit of electronics.
Yes.
So, really looking forward to seeing this in action.
Yeah, got a great camera too. PureView 20 megapixel. Doesn't stick out as much as the 43 megapixel one they did a few years ago.
I love the new Windows logo they've put on here. That's nice. Obviously a new addition, right?
I don't recall seeing it. It looks nice.
Just squares.
And
the
triple LED flash on the back.
Yeah.
No, it's good looking hardware.
Do we think Microsoft's finally matured their hardware software strategy?
Well, the biggest problem remains with Windows for mobile devices is the lack of applications. It just doesn't compare to the Android and iOS ecosystems. But with hardware, desirable hardware like this, I think, and the fact that it's running Windows, effectively the same Windows core that you run on your PC, with some important differences, I think means it's going to become a lot easier for people to migrate their desktop apps onto mobile, and may encourage a lot more people to develop for the Windows platform. So I'm hoping that it becomes more of a bigger competitor, because I think that the two dominant players, Apple and Google, could do with a bit of a kick up the bum and some competition.
Yeah, and even though they were slow off the running mark, Microsoft, I think, still has a lot of...
Never write them off.
Yeah, never write them off. They've got a few tricks up their sleeve.
They just come back. We saw that in the browser war days, for example. They never give up.
Yeah.
They haven't given up on search. I mean, what company in its right mind would take on Google in web search?
Microsoft has done it.
They just keep doing it.
Yeah,
you know, their market share might be sitting at 5%, but they're not giving up on it.
The underdog we all still love and love to death, yeah.
Anyway, I'm really looking forward to seeing these new phones. They're coming out later this month in the US. No word yet on South African timing, but I'm sure they're going to come here, given that the traditional Microsoft devices, Nokia business in South Africa, has always been active on the ground here. So I'm sure they'll be bringing these phones to market. I think there's less chance of the new Surface Book coming to the local market, since none of the Surface tablets have come here yet, which is unfortunate, because I'd love to see those devices for sale in the local market. But at the price points they're talking about, sort of 25k up,
especially with the exchange rate now,
they're
just going to get shorted.
It's not a mass market device. It's going to sell millions of, or even probably not even tens of thousands of units.
Well, perhaps this does signal a new strategy for them, and maybe they do consider, a few models in each region, just so the early adopters can get their hands on it. That would be a clever strategy.
Of course, you can buy the Surface devices through, and the Lumia devices through the Orange store. So if they don't bring the Surface Book here, we can always order it from the Orange store.
Just make sure you speak to your bank manager first.
Yes. Speak to the Reserve Bank to make sure you've got clearance to put that much money offshore.
Yeah. We joke, but we did say this about Apple devices. I mean, if I look at my notebook, it's definitely a little over 30k.
Yes.
You almost don't hesitate when you talk about that. But when something new comes out,
we use these machines extensively. So if it's a production machine,
it's definitely
you kind of have to find a way to justify it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
As write it off as a company expense. That's what everyone does.
Play
right. Cool. That's enough about Microsoft. Let's talk about Apple for a while. And some announcements coming out of Core Group, the local distributor, this week. In fact, today, or Friday rather.
Yeah.
Talking about the new Apple Watch, which is coming to South Africa on the 23rd of October, a little bit later than some people have been speculating. And we've also got pricing and launch date of the iPhone 6S. and none of it's coming cheap, I'm afraid. Particularly the new iPhones. Let me just bring up the story, the Tech Central piece on the pricing now, but there we go. It's the Rand is really unfortunately having a big impact on the price of electronics, and the new iPhone is not going to be cheap. So this is the recommended retail price from Core Group. So this is what you're going to pay at the iStore, in effect, for the entry level price of the new iPhone, the 16 gigabyte version, which is really a small amount of storage space on a smartphone these days. So you'd probably want to go for the 64 gig, but the 16 gig version is $11,799 cash. Which is, I think, about $2,000 up from the time of the launch of the iPhone 6 entry-level device. I think that was priced below 10, if I remember correctly. And the 64 gig, which is the one you'd really want to go for, if you don't need the 128, which I don't think most people do, is $13,599. And then if we look at the iPhone 6s Plus, the 16 gig goes for $13,599 and the 64 for $15,499. And if you want the top of the line 128 gig iPhone 6s Plus, you're going to pay $17,500.
That's a lot of money.
The price of a laptop. Yeah, a good laptop.
Yeah. Now that's going to be a difficult pill to swallow. But again, you know, if you buy this on contract, it's probably going to cost you $400-$500 over and above your regular subscription, and a lot of people will be able to afford it, I'm sure. But outright cash purchases, I don't see that happening with many South Africans. Not at the exchange rate.
No, I think a lot of people will get this on contract. And iStore is offering a trade-in, although they, in the terms and conditions, it states very clearly that the iPhone you're trading in for the new one has to be in impeccable condition to get the maximum value for your trade-in. So if you've got an iPhone 6, 16 gigabytes in mint condition, you will only I put in inverted commas, have to pay R5,299 for the 16 gig new iPhone model if you trade in your old one. So you're saving, let's do a quick maths here, about R6,000 if I'm working that out correctly.
That's obviously provided that you've already paid off your previous phone or you bought it outright and you cancel it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'll need to.
So basically you're taking a knock of about half the value of the phone after 12 months of using it, even if you've managed to keep it in mint condition. If it's not in mint condition, if it's got some nicks on it, then the iStore is not going to offer you that.
Yeah.
That sort of trade. Yeah. I remember I traded my old Apple II at the iStore about 6 months ago to get an iPad Air 2, and they gave me R800.
No, you can buy it. Set up on Gumtree for more.
Yeah. I was in the store. I had it, and I just...
Yeah, I just did it. But 128 definitely should be the standard for anybody that buys a phone these days.
And 128
gig. 64 gig. Yeah. I've got a 128 and I love it because I never have to delete anything, and I've got about 4 years worth of photographs that I've transferred from my old device and videos. And so from that point of view, it's you know, as a heavy user or as a geek, you know, you want 128.
Yeah.
But that's going to come at a price.
Yeah. I think we've spoken about on this podcast before, but the 16 gig is Apple being stingy, actually. It should start at 32.
Yeah, it should. There's no reason for them to... Because, I mean, the fact they're skipping 32 obviously says that they either have a surplus of 16 gigabyte chips or they got it at a good price.
Yeah, yeah. And most Android phones come with a minimum of 32 gig. I mean, the HTC I'm using is 32 gig. All the new Sonys are 32 gig. It seems to be pretty much the standard in the Android world. It's very unusual to find a 128 gig Android device.
And it's unlike Microsoft, unlike Apple to try and cater for the entry level of the market, but they're clearly going, or at least trying to get a price conscious user at least onto the platform, hooking them with their candy.
Although I find it hard pressed to call R11,800 entry.
Sure, fair enough. But it's Apple, always a premium.
Entry level is the Nokia 105 I bought the other day for running with, which cost me I think 179.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And the battery lasts for 2 weeks.
Let me rephrase. Entry level, high end. How's that?
Yes. Entry level in Apple universe. Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, the Apple Watch too. It'll be interesting to see how that's going to be that's definitely going to be a Christmas stocking filler for...
A lot of people are going to buy this for Christmas, yeah. I'm not going to touch it with a barge pole because the new one's going to come out quite soon afterwards, I suspect. It's interesting they didn't introduce a new Apple Watch this year, actually, at the keynote. I guess they I don't know why they didn't. Actually.
I think the technology is such a nature that, you know, Microsoft kind of, Apple cannot afford to, you know, especially with something as niche as this.
Yeah.
They cannot afford to launch too many devices on top of each other, because people are going to get burnt and they're going to feel, or they're going to feel like they're going to get burnt. Yeah. You know, I think what they did was, you know, especially with the software releases that they've done for the Apple Watch, they unlocked some functionality with the latest versions. That kind of breathes new life into the device, and let's hope they continue this trend for another year or two. And then release a new one. But yeah, it's certainly not going to be.
The prices don't seem excessive if you compare them to dollar pricing at the current exchange rate. Starting at 5899 for the 38mm, which is the one aimed at women, I think.
The small screen.
The small screen one, and the 42mm, 6799. And that's for the sports edition, yeah. The basic Apple Watch model is 9299. That's getting quite pricey for the 38, and then 10 grand for the 42mm. So if you want the standard Apple Watch edition, not the edition, rather, just the standard Apple Watch. It's 10 grand if you want the 42-inch model, so 42-millimeter model. So it's not exactly cheap. And going all the way up to 18,499 rand for the Apple Watch Space Black stainless steel case with Space Black link bracelet.
For the man that's got everything.
Thousands of people in South Africa won't think twice about buying one of these things. I'll just walk through into our store and put down their platinum
for credit card. For sure, I think it'll do very well. Yeah. And I mean, this hasn't been released elsewhere in Africa. We may even find ourselves getting a lot of African purchases, you know, because it's available. Yeah. I think that would be a big market.
Yeah, a lot of guys fly in from Africa and do their shopping in Joburg.
So we won't be getting these for Christmas then, is that what you're saying?
I certainly won't. In fact, Pedro Gonzalez, one of our reviewers, did a great piece this morning on the new Garmin Fenix 3. Now, that's something I might buy for Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Stunning looking sports watch, multi-sports watch. Mm. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the review today.
I've actually played with it before.
Oh, have you?
It's
beautiful.
It's everything that the Apple Watch isn't, in that it's more rugged looking. It doesn't look as refined.
Yeah.
You can still, you can't necessarily run the same type of apps on it as you would Apple
device. It's not meant to be jewelry.
Like, but it's not. Yeah. This is a very functional sports device.
But you're going to be paying the upper four digits for it, so it's in Apple Watch territory pricing wise. Yeah. But a lot more functional, I think, than the Apple Watch. If you're a runner or you do training,
triathlon and that kind of thing.
Mm, it's beautiful.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. It's. I've seen them in the flesh and I've played with them a bit, and it's definitely worth comparing if you are a sportsman.
Yeah, I'm very tempted to trade in my Garmin Forerunner 620 for one of these. I've got no real justification to do so, but I'm thinking of doing it. I'm not a multi-sportsman. I only do one sport, and that's trail running.
Yeah.
And so I don't really need this device, and my Forerunner 620 is a beautiful watch that does all of this stuff. But
it's the best sports watch you can buy, so that's really why you want it, obviously.
Yeah. And it looks beautiful. I love the color screen, and I love the fact that it works with both GPS and GLONASS simultaneously to pinpoint your position.
And the tracking on them, especially for trail runners, one of the things I really like is, you know, you can run into the mountains and it'll actually guide your path, you know, it'll record your path and then tell you how to get back.
Yes.
Which is brilliant. It's got a little...
That's great.
Not a map per se, but it tracks your movement and you can actually see which
direction... It's great for hiking as well if you get lost. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's the... Go check it out, the Garmin Fenix 3. It looks like a really cool smartwatch if you're thinking of Christmas already.
Mm. No, that's definitely a good stocking filler too. But chat to me next week and I will get you one to use for a few days. How's that?
Oh, cool.
I know some people.
Excellent.
It's definitely worth playing with and comparing.
Excellent. So AfriHost has announced that they're moving their ADSL customers, all their DSL customers for that matter, across onto their new ADSL network. And there's quite a story behind this. Are you on AfriHost at the moment?
I'm on AfriHost, yes. I'm very interested to see how this is actually going to pan out. I mean, I've been
How's your experience been?
With their move on MTN, I've found the network being solid. I've obviously got my data on there as well. So all my data for home and on my mobile device goes through AfriHost.
Yeah.
I've been very happy with the performance I've been getting. I've been running at the peak of that my ADSL line can deliver, which is about 9 megs.
Okay.
And obviously the pricing was the best part of it, on their current system at least.
Yeah.
So yeah. tell me more about when they're moving.
I was on AfriHost and had some problems, so I switched to ISPs, but in 2012 they used to be their upstream provider used to be Internet Solutions, and they moved away from IS. They got some sort of special deal with MTN Business, and they moved across to MTN, and then in 2014 MTN bought them, and they've been having lots of problems with their DSL network. If you just read online forums and that sort of thing, you'll see that their network has been far from ideal in terms of performance, and it's something I experienced as a former AfriHost customer.
Yeah, that was last year when I remember
it was last year.
We were talking about this quite a bit. You know?
Yeah, so they've become quite aware of this. And I had an interview about 2 months ago with Mteto Nyati, the CEO of MTN South Africa, and he said that they couldn't continue to provide AfriHost with the sort of pricing that they'd expected received in the past, because it was not profitable for MTN, and he said they were welcome to move to alternative upstream providers. So they've been running a whole lot of pilots over the last few months, and they've now moved across. And apparently they were a bit reluctant to say who they're using, but apparently they're using a combination of other upstream providers. And they're aggregating those upstream providers to make sure that they get the best performance.
It's kind of a cool idea, actually. Make sure, especially in the area that you are operating for that customer, give them the best solution.
And they've done tons of testing apparently done lots of configuration work, had tons of engineers in working on the network, and they're now starting to cut across. They've had about 5,000 people of their customers on the test network, and now this month they're going to cut across their entire customer base onto the new network and move off the old network. I still find it fascinating that MTN is no longer going to be their upstream provider for the DSL side of their business, given that MTN owns
it. That's what they're saying, yeah.
They're now cutting the customers across. So it's been interesting to see what the sort of customer feedback is on AfriHost Network. Be interested to see if you've noticed any performance improvement, but if you're already a happy customer.
Well, I was just wondering now, I mean, would they have announced to those users who they switched over that they're on a new... I don't think they would. They would just let them run and
I'm not sure.
Measure the performance from their side, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know if they did. I think I have a feeling you may have had to volunteer to be on that new network. I'm not sure.
Interesting.
But certainly they're going to cut across all of their customers during the course of this month. And so let me know if you notice any difference.
Oh, well.
Your lines are really maximized, you're probably not going to notice anything really different.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. Look, I mean, it's never perfect. I mean, you do have moments where something... But, it's difficult to fault something when you've got so many other factors in play.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, they are installing fiber in my neighborhood. I'll be able to get it early weeks in December. So,
oh, wow.
Whether I move away from DSL... Yeah, Vumatel,
lucky bugger.
So no Christmas presents for anybody in my family. I'm just going to be getting myself some fiber.
Okay. I've got no new news on fiber in my area, just that Telkom is still coming Q1 next year. That's all I know at this stage.
Sure. Well, set up a point-to-point link, how's that?
I'll trench fiber to your house.
Cat 5, Cat 6E. Yeah.
All right. Last news item this week is a press conference held by Seacom. Very interesting move by that company. Of course, the undersea cable operator. They own that subsea cable between South Africa and Europe, and I think they've also got a spur up to India. Of course, they don't like to be referred to as just the subsea cable operator, because they do plenty of other things as well. They've actually built an IP MPLS network. They offer Ethernet services, carrier Ethernet services. They've broadened beyond just being a basic provider of basic access on fiber under the ocean. But they've now announced that they're planning to go direct to corporate South Africa. So if you're a big company, you can engage with them directly and ask them to and buy services from them directly, which is a really interesting development, and potentially I think has the potential to upset some of their customers, their wholesale customers.
Very much so.
But they say they're also going to work very closely with their partners, especially in going after the SME market and some of the lesser sized corporates. But interesting move nonetheless, and I think it's going to have an interesting impact on this market. Comments by the CEO, Byron Clatterbuck, saying that they believe that the corporate market in South Africa is underserved by fiber, and they're hoping that through this move they're going to be able to help address that situation. So perhaps a bit of a criticism of the local telecoms market.
Yeah, for sure. That was my first think. I mean, they obviously didn't get the right kind of growth out of the players at the moment, and they probably felt that they could do more by stepping into the game and actually, you know, partaking in the deployment of fiber to businesses.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah. No. I think
we can all benefit from that.
Let's see. I mean, they're going to have to manage their partnerships quite carefully, I think, but it's great to see Seacom, which is, you don't think of these undersea cable operators as playing directly in that sort of market. So it's great to see Seacom becoming more active in the South African market and seeing this market as so important to them.
Yeah. Look forward to that one.
All right, let's do our features. Our winner and loser of the week. I figured our Eskom would be a good one to pick this week because they haven't had load shedding in a heck of a long time, despite the fact that we are suffering through one of the worst heat waves, at least the northern part of the country, that we've had in years. And with lights have stayed on, despite the fact that there must be huge demand on, from air conditioning systems fans and that sort of thing. So well done to Eskom for keeping the power on. They seem to be doing something right under their new CEO, Brian Malefic.
Yeah, definitely.
And our loser this week, I think for possibly the fourth or fifth time, is...
Again, do you get the company car soon?
Chief Operator, I think he may be out on his ear soon, is the he's actually the full-time now Chief Operating Officer of the SABC, and that's Mr. Klaudi Motseneng, who has just been handed a huge defeat by the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein. Over the appeal related to the public protector's findings that I forget all the details now, but that he increased his own salary and that he lied about his qualifications and whether he had a matric and all that sort of thing. As of recording time, he still had not been suspended or volunteered to go on suspension, even though, as I understand it, the court decision effectively means that the public protector's instruction that he be suspended for 60 days pending an investigation is now in force. Presumably, he's in fact already said that the SABC is going to appeal on his behalf all the way to the Constitutional Court now. It's probably going to take another year or two. This guy just doesn't know when to go. He's obviously protected in the right political places. We all know he's where that comes from. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all we can do is make him our loser of the week.
Anybody that can look after their own salary and disobey any court orders, you know, that's a job that I want.
Anyway, he says he respects the courts, but he's using his lawyers and not his own money, presumably, to stall this thing as long as he can.
But again, you know, how much energy is being wasted on this kind of thing when we should actually be working on the public broadcaster as an entity, and you know, it needs to become something that we can all look up to, like a BBC type service that actually offers some real benefit to South Africans.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your pick this week?
So I came across, as a cord cutter, I came across a very cool website.
Another one you recommended. What was it? ITV.
ITV for the rugby. Yeah. So this website is called Pluto.tv, like the planet Pluto.tv, and essentially what they do is they broadcast web content, but in a format that feels like it's a cable subscription. So you log on and they've just got live TV playing or pre-recorded content, but in a live scheduled format. Anything from music to documentaries. There's some movies. Now you won't necessarily find Hollywood blockbusters in here, but we all know that the content you can get on the internet is so vast, and there's so many amazing things on there.
This is definitely good YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, if anybody out there is a Netflix user, they off. You know how long it takes to choose something off that vast catalog, especially if you don't know what you want to watch.
Yes.
What makes this very cool is, you know, switch this on and then just flip through the channels, and inevitably there'd be something on I want to watch at least for an hour or so.
Okay.
It's really, really cool checking out.
I'll check it out. I'll load that up on my TV and have a look at it.
And they also did do a deal with Hulu, so you do get some really cool American shows on there. I mean, Conan O'Brien is on there. There's some Ellen DeGeneres. There's some stand-up comedy. So you do get broadcast quality television. It's not all just YouTube videos that they rebroadcast. And this is real content
you know, that you can enjoy as a DStv subscription like service.
Okay.
Well worth checking out.
Great stuff. Check it out. It's Pluto.tv. My pick this week, and I want to show you after we finish recording this podcast on my 4K monitor. But it's just fantastic. I know you saw me tweet about it earlier this week.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant gigapixel plus image of Rio de Janeiro. Did you have a chance to have a squiz at that photograph?
I had a quick look at it, but I mean, obviously it doesn't look near as good on my little screen as what it would on a 4K monitor.
Absolutely incredible. It's a photograph taken by a South African company called FanCam. And absolutely remarkable level of detail. I'm not sure how big the actual image is, but it looks way beyond gigapixel size, actually.
Mm.
And the distance that you can zoom in and the detail that you can get, for example, zooming right into the flight cockpit of an aeroplane in the picture.
Yes.
Wow. It's well worth checking out. I'll include the link on the show notes for the podcast, but in case you're listening to this podcast away from your PC or your phone, you can find it at panasonic.in360, that's IN, the number 3, and then the word 60.com/2015. panasonic.in360.com/2015. It's an absolutely amazing image, so go check that out if you're a fan of gigapixel photography. Cool, I think that's the show for this week.
Yeah, it was a good one. A lot of new toys we're waiting for Christmas, so now we just have to get them in our grubby little balls.
Between Apple and Microsoft, I think people are going to be spending a lot of money in the next few months.
Oh yeah.
I'm almost certain I'm going to get that Microsoft Lumia XL 950 XL. It really does look beautiful, and play around with the Windows Phone for a while. Anyway, as always, if you've got any feedback on the show, send us a mail. We'd love to hear from you. The email address is info@techcentral.co.za, or leave a comment on the post entry on the website. Until next time, from Richard and myself, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.